You're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm speaking with Shannon Hiller, Chief Marketing Officer for the Clark County Credit Union, or CCCU. The credit union has their fifth annual Happy Bonus Days promotion coming up, which benefits five local charities and five lucky members who shop during the Thanksgiving holiday weekend. Shannon, thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
So first of all, what is the Clark County Credit Union?
So Clark County Credit Union, we've been around over 70 years. We're a nonprofit financial institution that was founded right here in, of course, Clark County to serve those who were employees of the county. But we've expanded over the years to include other municipalities like the city of Las Vegas, Henderson, North Las Vegas, all of our first responders, our wonderful medical community as well. And so really, there's a way for anyone to apply and join the credit union.
Awesome. And what are the Happy Bonus Days all about?
Happy Bonus Days are something that we started 5 years ago to just spread a little more holiday cheer and joy back to our members. And so what we do is it's twofold. We have something that we do for our members and something that we do for nonprofits in our community. And so this year, we're going to give $2,500 to five different nonprofits. And some of those were voted on by our employees. Some are those that we have supported throughout the year. And then we're also going to give up to $2,500 paid off of a Clark County Credit Union credit card for those who shop during the holidays. So kind of a win-win. You get to give back to these great nonprofits as well as get a chance for your one swipe of a card could win you up to $2,500 paid off of your Clark County Credit Union Visa credit card.
Wow, that's fantastic. So which nonprofits are receiving the donations this year?
So this year we're doing Cure for the Kids, Candlelighters, Olive Crest, the Neighborhood Challenge, and Goody Two Shoes. And you can see they're all really themed around children in our community who are at risk, either medically or just in a situation where they might need extra assistance, like they're in foster care or don't have the funds for certain things that their families need. And so we're just really excited to be helping these five charities.
Yeah. Now, that's more charities and more money for each than in the past years. So why the increase?
Yeah, we just want to do more. We just want to give back more. And like you said, it's the fifth year. We're really excited about it. And, you know, we looked at our community giving budget and we just felt like we had it this year to be able to do more for these great groups. And $2,500, if everyone else was giving too, I know we could do a lot more, but we're just trying to lift up during this time. And there's a lot of different groups that we give to all year. And this is just something we thought, hey, this is a great little boost towards the end of the year when people really need that extra holiday cheer and they're doing extra special things for the kids in their groups.
Yeah, that's great. Now, from the card member side, what exactly do the credit union members have to do in order to enter the drawing and potentially get their credit card bills paid?
That's probably the easiest drawing you could ever enter. All you have to do is, well, first have a Clark County Credit Union Visa card. And then second is just swipe your card between Thanksgiving, because we all know the sales start so much earlier, Thanksgiving to Cyber Monday. And if you use your card, anytime you swipe, that equals one entry into our drawing. And it's just a random drawing. We'll pick five winners. And so the more you use your card between those Thanksgiving and Cyber Monday dates, the better your chances are of winning, having that $2,500 paid off.
Okay. And you said up to $2,500. So what determines the amount?
It's whatever your balance is on your card. So if you have $2,500, we'll pay that off. If you had $1,000, we'll pay off $1,000. So if your balance is higher than $2,500, we'll have to work out a plan for you to pay that off. But $2,500 is the max per card that we can pay off.
All right. So obviously, that's great incentive to use the Clark County Credit Union Visa card, especially during Thanksgiving weekend. We're talking Black Friday, mm-hmm. Cyber Monday. Now, for those who don't win, what kind of advice can you give them for holiday budgeting?
Well, first, if they use our card in general, we have some great rewards. So using the card all year long earns you, cash back, discounts on great items, merchandise, holiday, trips, things like that. So there's always a way to win when you're using the card. But secondly, advice that I would give is really to think ahead about your budget. There's so many things that sneak into that budget. I know I have four kids, they're in school. You have the teacher gift, you have the neighbor gift, you have, an ugly sweater that you didn't know you needed to buy for somebody for a party. And you have all of these things that just add up holiday cards, postage stamps. And those kind of things are sort of on the edges, right? We're making a Christmas list. We're not really thinking about all of the things that go into it. And then you can really get a realistic picture of what it's going to cost to do all those fun things and traditions that you want to keep up, and maybe make some decisions to change or modify, do something different. And then I keep all of that on my phone. I have a list. I have either per person or a total budget that I'm trying to stay in. And then even throughout the year, I just go on there and type in like an idea for somebody, or if I've purchased it, I can check it off on my phone. I just use the simple notes app and keep track that way. So usually when I'm out and about shopping or even shopping online, I always have my phone with me. So it's a really easy way just to keep that, you know, top of mind and like making sure I'm staying within my budget. So set the budget early, shop early, so that way you can take advantage of all those really great sales and not be like last minute picking out something that maybe you wouldn't have normally purchased.
Yeah, some great advice. So someone needs to be a member of the Clark County Credit Union before they can apply for a CCCU visa, right?
Correct. So becoming a member just takes a day. It's pretty quick to get the member application done. And then you also can apply for a credit card. And our wonderful team will be more than happy to help get you set up with that. And then you also get to be enrolled in our rewards program and you start earning right away. We have a really great introductory offer. We get bonus points. And so just, it would be a great time to get started.
Okay. So where can listeners go to learn more or become a member of the Clark County Credit Union and then take part in the Happy Bonus Days?
They can visit our website, ccculv.org. or call our service team at 702-228-2228. We'd happy to be welcoming our new members this year.
Okay, fantastic. So once again, the website is ccculv.org. That stands for Clark County Credit Union, Las Vegas. So ccculv.org, or you can call 702-228-2228, 702-228-2228. And again, during Happy Bonus Days, five lucky Visa card members will receive up to $2,500 of their balance paid off just for shopping over the Thanksgiving holiday weekend. And at the same time, donations are being given to five nonprofits in Las Vegas: Cure for the Kids, Candlelighters, Olive Crest, the Neighborhood Challenge, and Goody Two Shoes, all fantastic local nonprofits who are making a big difference right here in our valley. And we've been speaking today with Shannon Hiller. She's the Chief Marketing Officer for the Clark County Credit Union. And Shannon, it's great talking to you and finding out what you're doing for the community, what you're doing for your members, and how it's benefiting anyone who wants to take part. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Heather.
We need each other because every someone needs someone else.
We need each other because when we work together, we can do so much more.
We connect more children with what they need to grow up healthy, educated, and safe. And that's what Child Fund is all about.
Because when you make someone's world better, you make everyone's world better.
Child Fund. Because we need each other.
Learn more at childfund.org. That's childfund.org.
This is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and joining me is James Bell, Head of Corporate Communications for Kia America. James is speaking to us live from the 2024 SEMA show in Las Vegas, which features automotive accessories that enhance performance, comfort, and safety. James, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much. I'm still playing with cars, so it's a good day.
Now, we have a lot of major conferences and trade shows here, but what exactly is the SEMA show?
Wow, that's a great question. So it is officially, SEMA stands for the Specialty Equipment Manufacturers Association. And what that means is it's the kind of collection of anything that makes your vehicle look better, go faster, turn better, stop better, be safer, just basically amplifying anything about the car that you bought from the dealership and making it either, again, more personalized, give it a look or some new kind of outside details that make it yours, or going, you know, under the hood, underneath the suspension, and doing things to make it, you know, more aggressive from a sporting perspective, more comfortable, more luxurious. Basically, it's all the halls are filled with things that make your car, I guess you could say, better.
Are these things that consumers would do to their own cars to kind of soup them up after the fact?
Yeah, exactly. So it is more of a consumer thing, but of course, I work for Kia, so there are some of the car companies that will come and show off their wares here, in many cases showing things that might be on future production cars. So it's a combination of, you know, things that you can add to your current car to make it better or give you a glimpse into the future for what you might be buying from a dealership in the near future.
Nice. Okay. What's the coolest or most innovative thing that you've seen at the show?
Well, I would be remiss if I didn't say what I'm standing next to right now, which is Kia's Weekender concept. This is a all-electric, kind of off-road minivan sort of machine. Very futuristic. Everybody who's come through the show stands back and says, okay, didn't expect to see that here because it's a huge vision into the future. And it really kind of represents the future of getting out into the outdoors, enjoying nature, getting off the grid, so to speak, but doing it with an EV. And I think that's something that some of the folks here at SEMA have been maybe a little knocked sideways by, because most of the technologies here, most of the equipment that's available is for current gasoline-powered cars. But we see a future, I mean, the world sees the future, where it's going to be electrified transportation. And the Weekender concept that we at Kia have here on display is a great example of that.
Okay, so, I mean, obviously electric vehicles are getting more and more common in general. So is the surprise because it's an electric off-road vehicle?
Sort of, yeah. I mean, there are some electric off-road vehicles that are available in the market today. We at Kia have a vehicle called the EV9, which is an all-wheel drive, three-row SUV. Vehicles people may be familiar with are like the GMC Hummer, the Rivian R1S. So there are a couple in the market now, but that's where the industry's moving along, where it's going. So I think the surprise was in it being an off-roader from Kia and all electric. So when you put all those three pieces together, that's where the shock has come.
Okay. What would you say to the people who aren't sure that an EV could stand up to that type of aggressive off-road driving?
They should go do it and come back happy. Easiest way to explain it. Candidly, an EV is better equipped for going off-road and living that kind of outdoorsy life because you don't have as many things to break down. I mean, with a gasoline engine, lots of things can go wrong. You could, you know, go over a boulder that could crack the oil pan, and then all of a sudden your engine's inoperable. With an electric vehicle, there's very few moving parts. You know, you've got the battery pack underneath, which is all encased in super strong metals, and then just electric motors to drive each of the wheels. So it would be a nicer way in nature, a safer way, and much more reliable because vastly fewer things to go wrong.
And where would you charge in the middle of the desert or the forest or the mountains, wherever you happen to be camping?
No, that's a great question. So on this Weekender concept, we have actually installed a couple ways to make electricity. First off, there's the entire roof is made of solar panels. So you're going to be collecting energy through those solar panels all the time you're out in the wilderness. And then we have something really interesting. It's called turbo hydro wheels. They are basically fans within the wheels themselves. And I will add, these are only concept at this moment, but when Kia shows a concept, there's a good chance something is coming in the future that's going to be connected to this. But again, these are fans that are built into the wheels. So when you're driving, these fans spin, obviously, as the wind is going by them, and it creates electricity and generates electricity, which then goes back into the battery pack. Let's say you then get up to your location, you're parked up on a plateau or a mountaintop, enjoying your camping experience. The breeze that's going by the car all day, all night, is going to be generating electricity. Maybe you're driving through a little stream as you're crossing over to get to another space that you want to be. As the water goes by those fans, they create electricity. So yes, obviously there's not charging stations out in nature. There's not gas stations out in nature, either, to be fair. But we're really building this up to be as sustainable and as independent and ready for an adventure out in nature as cleanly as possible.
Wow, that sounds pretty awesome.
It is.
Now, obviously what you're showing there is pretty unique, but what are some of the latest trends overall from the 2024 SEMA show?
That's a great question. So I think it feels to me thus far that the idea of really making your car personalized, making it your own, whether that's, putting new wheels on it, getting, one of the big trends right now is wrapping the vehicle, changing the color, the look, the texture of the outside of the vehicle, but not painting it, not making a permanent change. The wraps that are available today are just amazing, and you could put them on. They are completely protecting your vehicle from the sun and dirt and so forth, protecting the paint. And then maybe 2 years, you think, I think I want to make my car red now. That wrap can be very safely removed, and then you can put a new system on the outside, and the paint is never impacted in a negative way. So I think that, you know, outside personalization, and again, and taking a stock vehicle and making it your own, and then having the ability to then change that again and again and again, very affordably, by the way, is one of the big trends I'm noticing here.
Nice. Okay. The SEMA show isn't open to the public, but how can consumers benefit from these new concepts and products being shown?
Well, you know, I think it's really about the industry all kind of looking at itself and saying, how can we challenge each other? And that's one of the reasons that a lot of the car companies like to come to SEMA instead of just personalizing companies and tire companies and wheel companies and so forth. So it really is a chance to brag a little bit, to show off new ideas. The amount of, I guess you could say, individuality in the halls here at SEMA is really, I mean, it just shows you the range of human thought and human emotion. And then when you take those emotions and those, you know, sensibilities and put them into machines that move us around, it can get pretty exciting. So I think that's the biggest thing. It's just the element of challenge and what's next is really what SEMA is all about.
That's cool. Okay, so where can listeners go if they want to find out more information? Obviously, they can't buy the concept vehicle that you're showing, but, you know, there are other EVs and other things they can do.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, on behalf of Kia, I would recommend going to kia.com. There you've got information on another vehicle that we have here on display called the EV9 Adventure. And that is basically a vehicle you could buy today. And with the products that are available here at SEMA, make it look just, you know, ready for off-road toughness just the same way. So, yeah, kia.com is a good place to start. But, you know, also go to SEMA.org. You can see everything that I'm looking at right now. And I wish you could be here with me.
Awesome. Sounds great. So once again, kia.com, if you want to find out more about what Kia does offer now, kia.com. Of course, Kia is innovative in the EV space. And then SEMA.org, if you would like to find out more about what happens at the SEMA show, that's SEMA.org, SEMA.org. And we've been speaking today with James Bell. He's the head of corporate communications for Kia America. And James, I want to thank you so much for being here, sharing with us some of the new trends, some of the new things we can look forward to, and what's happening in the world of automotive. So thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Hello, everybody. I'm Chris Walker, the guy pictured on crosswalk signs everywhere, pleading with all drivers to slow down, not be distracted or drunk, and watch and stop for pedestrians, especially in school zones. And yikes, bikes, watch for bikes too. And walkers, to be safe, cross at all marked crosswalks, or you can legally cross at unmarked implied intersection crosswalks as well. Got it? I am your walk star. Check me out online at chriswalker.org.
I'm Heather Vail, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Amy Niles, Chief Mission Officer at the PAN Foundation. As we approach 2025, changes to Medicare Part D could impact millions of people across the country. And yet, the PAN Foundation's Center for Patient Research recently conducted a national poll showing that close to 90% of people enrolled in Medicare haven't seen, heard, or read anything about these reforms. Amy, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
So, what is the PAN Foundation?
The PAN Foundation is a national charitable foundation and healthcare organization, and we are on a mission to accelerate access to care through providing financial assistance to people who are underinsured by advocating for patient-centric policy solutions that improve access to care for millions and educating patients and healthcare providers.
Okay. Now, what are the major changes to the Medicare Part D program that are starting on January 1st?
Yeah, there are two really historic changes coming to the Medicare Part D program. The first is a $2,000 Medicare Part D cap, and the second is a voluntary Medicare prescription payment plan. And both of these changes coming, which are significant, will impact people, again, with Part D plans, either through traditional Medicare or through Medicare Advantage plans with prescription drug coverage.
Okay. Now, when you talk about Medicare Part D plan, what does that mean?
Medicare Part D plan is the plan that people enroll in to provide coverage for their prescription medications. And now is open enrollment, which extends through December 7th. And it is really an important time for people on Medicare to evaluate their Part D plans and determine based on their needs if those plans are meeting those needs or whether there may be a plan that is better for them.
Okay. So when you say there's a $2,000 Medicare Part D cap, that's a cap on all their medication for the year?
That's exactly right. In 2025, people with Medicare Part D will not pay any more than $2,000 in out-of-pocket costs for their prescription medications. And this is through Part D, as in David. All medications that are included in their Part D plans will be included under this cap, which is automatic, which is a nice thing. People on Medicare don't need to do anything to benefit from this cap.
Okay. Now, what did your recent national poll reveal about how much people knew about these changes at this point?
Our recent polling through the Center for Patient Research at PAN found that the majority, in fact, 9 out of 10 individuals on Medicare were not aware of these two important changes, the Medicare Part D cap and the Medicare prescription payment plan, which is another new change coming that will allow people to pay these drug costs over the course of the year, allow them to spread these costs and their payments to make it more affordable. But, you know, when learning more about these changes, they feel that they may be beneficial, and we have created an online resource to be kind of a one-stop shop for people with Medicare coverage to learn more about their Part D plans, about the changes coming, and to provide additional resources to them.
So where is this website where people can go if they'd like more information or to access resources that will help them navigate these changes to Medicare Part D?
Yeah, the PAN Foundation Online Medicare Reforms Guide can be found at panfoundation.org/reforms. And that's plural with an S, panfoundation.org/reforms.
Okay, perfect. So once again, that website is panfoundation.org/reforms, panfoundation.org/reforms. You can find out all about the new changes happening to Medicare Part D plans that are taking effect on January 1st, panfoundation.org/reforms. And we've been speaking today with Amy Niles. She's the Chief Mission Officer at the PAN Foundation. And Amy, I really appreciate you being here and sharing these changes with us and how they can affect listeners and where they can go to find out more. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Ever lose your keys? Is that normal aging, dementia, or something else? Fear often stops us from asking for a simple checkup from the neck up. Knowing your numbers, blood pressure, blood sugar, and cholesterol are common, but your cognitive numbers are also important. Request our free guide. It's filled with tips for better brain health, facts about dementia, and much more. Go to 1-800-DEMENTIA.org or call 1-800-DEMENTIA. Your brain will thank you.
This is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and I'm Heather Vail. Joining me is Chuck Henderson, CEO of the American Diabetes Association, or ADA. November is National Diabetes Month, and the American Diabetes Association is offering resources and raising awareness about the disease. Chuck, thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, thank you, Heather. Good morning. Thanks for having me. Glad to be on your program.
So, first of all, what exactly is the American Diabetes Association?
So the American Diabetes Association is a 501c3 nonprofit that advocates on behalf of people living with diabetes and obesity that can't advocate for themselves. And so our mission is to prevent, treat, and eventually find a cure for diabetes. And so we're the largest diabetes-related nonprofit in the United States and in the world as well.
Nice. Okay. Now, how prevalent is diabetes in the U.S.?
That's a great question. I get this question, you know, asked pretty much every single day, Heather. And so nearly 1 in 2 Americans has diabetes or prediabetes. So it's highly likely that someone that you know, or I know, or loved one is impacted with diabetes. You know, our friends are struggling to afford insulin, so it's a big affordability and access issue. And then parents are fighting to end diabetes with a cure for their children, because the problem is that we're having families rationing insulin in their home because it's so expensive. And then every 26 seconds, someone in the U.S. is diagnosed with diabetes. And so the ADA, American Diabetes Association, is actually in a dogfight, fighting for a cure for everyone.
Wow. What are the key differences between type 1 diabetes, type 2, gestational diabetes, and pre-diabetes, as you just mentioned?
Yeah, another great question. And so when you have diabetes, your blood glucose or your blood sugar levels rise too high. And in type 1 diabetes, your immune system destroys the beta cells in your pancreas that actually make the insulin. And so eventually, your body is no longer able to make its own insulin, which is a problem. And so then in type 2 diabetes, your body does not make enough insulin or does not use the insulin that it does make well. And then type 2 diabetes is the most common type of diabetes. And then thirdly, you have gestational diabetes that develops during pregnancy. And so what that means is that your blood glucose levels may or may not return to normal after giving birth. And even if they do return normal, you have a higher risk of developing type 2 diabetes later in life and the need to be tested regularly by your healthcare professional.
Okay. And pre-diabetes means you don't have diabetes yet, but you might be at risk for it?
Yes, absolutely. So there are different scales. And so anything under 5.7, you're good. Anything above 5.7, once you start getting into that 5.8 and beyond, those are symptoms of pre-diabetes. And then once you get above 6.2 or 6.3, you have diabetes.
Okay. What are some of the signs and symptoms we should look for in diabetes?
Yeah, this is a good question. And this is a tricky question because some of these symptoms mirror other chronic things. And so when you think about having to urinate often, when you think about feeling thirsty or feeling hungry, even though you eat in a big meal, when you feel like you have extreme fatigue, blurry vision, cuts and bruises that are often slow to heal, you know, tingling pain, numbness in your body, you know, those are all potential symptoms that you have pre-diabetes or diabetes.
Okay. And how can we prevent diabetes?
We have to raise awareness. There's a 60-second type 2 diabetes risk test that you can take online at the adadiabetes.org/risk test. You know, that will tell you, you know, where you are in the journey, or if you don't have diabetes or pre-diabetes. And if you do, you can take steps to prevent them by taking this test. Also, if type 1 diabetes runs in your family, the chances of you or your child developing type 1 diabetes may be higher. And so again, early detection is essential in the fight to avoid diabetes-related complications, including heart, kidney, and other eye diseases, and more complications associated with these comorbidities.
And are there lifestyle changes we could make to lessen the risk of developing diabetes?
Yes, absolutely. I would say at the ADA, you know, raising awareness, providing education on reducing diabetes risk through healthy eating, lifestyle programs. We have a program called Project Power, which is a lifestyle change program for the entire family. We have an Ask the Expert series where you can ask experts questions and hear from others with similar experiences. We have our standards of care that we recommend for healthcare professionals that include resources for personalized care, tips, insights, recipes to support more people living with diabetes and their caregivers, which also carry a very heavy burden. And then lastly, you can go to our great website, diabetes.org, which has a plethora of resources on all things related to diabetes.
Okay. Now, you mentioned obesity. Does obesity always lead to diabetes?
So obesity is a chronic disease in the same league as heart disease, diabetes, and kidney disease. And so when we think about, you know, people developing obesity from a mixture of behavioral, environmental, and genetic factors. And so I'm glad you asked that question because we just launched the Obesity Association, which is a division under the American Diabetes Association, because obesity is the leading risk factor for developing prediabetes and type 2 diabetes. And so just obesity accounts for 53% of new cases of type 2 diabetes every single year. And so unfortunately, there's a stigma and a shame and blame too often to keep people who need obesity care from pursuing it. So at the ADA, we're absolutely raising awareness and providing education around obesity.
Okay. So you did give some web pages, but let's give another rundown. Where can people go if they want to find out more information, access the American Diabetes Association resources that you have available, or get involved in the fight to end diabetes?
Yes, please go to diabetes.org/wefight. And we have a plethora of resources where you can get involved in communities. It takes all of us. And that allows us to meet people where they are and deploy the right resources in the community that allows us to meet people where they are.
Okay, perfect. So once again, diabetes.org/wefight. If you'd like to get involved in the fight against diabetes, diabetes.org/wefight. And Chuck also mentioned diabetes.org/risk test. If you'd like to assess your risk of developing diabetes or know if you might be pre-diabetic, diabetes.org/risk test. And in honor of American Diabetes Month, diabetes.org/ADM, diabetes.org/ADM. And we've been speaking today with Chuck Henderson. He's the CEO of the American Diabetes Association. And Chuck, it's been great hearing about all these resources that you have available for consumers in helping you to end the fight against diabetes, find out more about diabetes, if they have diabetes, if a family member has diabetes, if they might be at risk of developing diabetes. You have everything there that people could need, especially now during National Diabetes Month. So thank you so much for your time today, Chuck.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Have a blessed day.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
Just a little heads up before something bad happens.
Move your coffee cup away from your computer.
Oh, no.
So you can have more control.
Stop. You're texting your boss by mistake.
Uh-oh. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes like managing your weight, getting active, stopping smoking, and eating healthier, you can stop prediabetes before it leads to type 2 diabetes. It's easy to learn your risk. Take the 1-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Warning, the cap is loose on that ketchup.
Ugh. Don't wait. You have the power to change the outcome. Visit doihaveprediabetes.org today. That's doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
I'm Heather Vail, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Mariano Sigman, internationally leading figure in cognitive neuroscience, director of the Human Brain Project, and author of the new book, The Power of Words, How to Speak, Listen, and Think Better. Mariano, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be talking with you today.
So what inspired you to write your new book, The Power of Words, How to Speak, Listen, and Think Better?
I've been doing neuroscience for about 25 years, and I've done different things within neuroscience, like perception, decision-making, memory, and so on. And also at different scales, I studied single neurons and then how circuits of neurons and then systems and eventually like cognitive science and so on. And more and more, and I've been interested on questions of neuroscience that I think respond to the questions that we all pose to ourselves. And I think we've all always posed to ourselves. And those are very simple questions. They are in a way like childish questions, which have to do with, you know, why we have some fears, which are very hard to overcome. Why there are some things that we would like to remember, but we can't, or on the contrary, why there are certain things that we would like to forget, but we cannot. Why often we are jealous when we would not to be, why we are not so tender or compassionate with the people we like the most, and often we become aggressive. And I'm saying these things in the first person of the plural, because I think each of these questions, of course, people vary, but we all have these things where, you know, we would like to do better. And we do not know exactly how. And I was struggling, as all, with these questions. And then I began doing what we all do, like reading the classics, you know, the Stoics and Aristotle and like all these great minds. And later Shakespeare and Proust and people that have given us very good insights on how, you know, to become more virtuous in a way or become more the person we want to be. But then I thought it's interesting that science that has taken us so far has taken us to the moon, and we are now speaking across continents through the internet because of the science we've done about that. But hasn't science also done a good job in these questions, which are the questions we have always asked? And this was the beginning of the book. And it began on a self-quest of very specific things of my life, which I wanted to improve, and which I went to science to find the responses and how to do best for that. And then that was the beginning of the book. And I think this is the spirit which has remained, which is a book which is, it's based on science, it has solid science, but it has the strong spirit of thinking it on a deep way on how it will be useful for people in any way to improve their lives.
Okay, so then how do the words that we use affect our brains and therefore our whole being?
Yeah, so this comes very easy with an example, right? So in the beginning of our lives, we all pronounce some sentences. They differ according to different people. Some people will say, like, I'm just not good for math. Or some people will say, no, arts are not for me. Or some people will say it in some form of relationships, like, I cannot have this type of relationships. I cannot commit to these kind of things. I'm not good, or for their resilience or persistence. And science has shown us that those sentences are never precise. They're never correct. Usually what happens, let's say in the example of a child learning math, is that they go through a first course and maybe they just didn't like it. Maybe their professor was not good. Maybe it was hard for them. But of course, one thing is hard and the other thing is impossible. And what happens is in the very moment that we pronounce these words, I am not good for math, or I cannot do math, or math is not for me, or science is not for me, or arts is not for me, or writing is not for me, or playing the violin is not for me, or having a long-term relationship is not for me, or having the courage to change job is not good for me. Each time we pronounce one of these sentences, we do not perceive it as the opinion of someone. Like, if someone would tell that to you, then you may not like it, but you still understand that this is just an opinion and that you may overcome this opinion. But when we pronounce these sentences to ourselves, then we think it's just a fact, it's reality. And then what happens is that once we've stated this, we do not do anything to change that. So this would be, once again, in the simplest example is the student which is studying math. They go through a first grade, they just don't do good, and then they say, I'm just bad. And then they just shut the door. And this is one of the, you know, most powerful and more toxic aspects of the bad use of words, which is that they become a self-fulfilled prophecy for a bunch of things that we could do, but we do not do because we've professed or we've sentenced that we cannot do them.
Okay, so then how does changing the stories that we tell ourselves improve our results?
Yeah, so one of the studies where this has been best documented and following what I was just telling you, Carol Dweck, she's made a very vast and consistent story on what she describes as the different mindsets. And it essentially relates to what I was just telling you, which is that if you give children a problem which is slightly more difficult than they can do, say you give like a third grader a problem of a fourth or fifth grader, then typically, of course, there's a vast continuum, but their children, they respond mostly on two categories. Some of them say, it cannot be done, I cannot do it. And the other children give another narrative, which is, well, you know, this is very hard, and today I cannot do it, but, you know, I have an older sister, and she knows about this, so if I would ask her, or maybe if I study this, or maybe in 2 years, and those are the ones that Carol Dweck refers to as a growth mindset. They have mindset where they understand that something that they cannot do, then they can do it. And if you think about it, those are two different narratives about the same observation. It's a hard problem. Some of them make the interpretation it's impossible. The other ones make the interpretation it's difficult. But if I work on this, then I can change it. And Carol Dweck has very vast, long, long-term series of studies where she has shown that the children that have this mindset, where they make a narrative that what is hard is just hard, not impossible, then they do much better in school, they have much better educational trajectories and so on. So there you have a very clear-cut example on how just adjusting the narrative, in this case, to what is correct, which is do not confuse what's hard with what is impossible, actually changes your brain because it sets your brain on a mode in which you will be learning and seeking for information. And this is because you're in a state of the mind and a state of the brain in which you are looking for this, and then we can go exactly on how this is implemented. But then, and more important than that, this changes your future reality. Because once you have been engaged in this mode, then you begin doing things. And maybe the most classic example for this is adults. The majority of adults make the constructions that it's too late for them to learn. And science, like Erikson, but also many others, have shown, once again, very, very convincingly, that throughout life, we have more or less the same capacity of learning adults and child. And of course, there are changes in the brain. There's less synaptogenesis and things happen. And there are certain things which are harder to learn for adults. The most typical one is the accents of our language. There are like some specific aspects which we understand that are more difficult. But like learning the violin or the piano or any instrument or learning even to program, those things are not more difficult for an adult than for a child. Yet, the majority of adults make this construction, and this has to be explained. And the reason for this is that what changes between adults and children is not the capacity to learn, but the necessity and hence the motivation to learn. As adults, we more or less achieve in the world. You have a job, I have a job, the majority of us, we have a job. We understand more or less how things work. We know more or less how to drive. We've traveled, we know people, we've seen movies, we've read books. And so we arrive to this state in which we are not anymore in a state of necessity and in a state of seeking more knowledge. Yet children, they have to learn everything, not just maths and language and geography, but they also have to learn what makes them cry, what makes them happy, what makes other people angry, what things will make other people love them, and so on. And so they are professional learners, and they have a very vast motivation because their life depends on learning or not learning. And as adults, we have reached what Erikson calls the okay threshold. This is a point in which we feel that we are doing okay and that we can learn, but learning requires much more effort than what we think actually we will get by the return. And then what we make is this narrative by which we say, well, we are just too old to learn. But this is not true. And people that understand this and that do learn things that are very important for them in life, many of those I speak in the book, then achieve a lot of meaning and a lot of happiness and very, very significantly improve their quality of their lives.
Interesting. All right. Now, sometimes these stories that we tell ourselves spark emotions that can spiral out of control. So how can we manage our emotional lives, including those mysterious fears that you mentioned earlier?
Yeah. So the first thing we have to understand is that like descriptions of emotions is ambiguous, as is the description of personalities, right? So like if you say a person is stubborn, I mean, this may be positive or it may be negative because you may be speaking about something that someone that's very resilient and when they're faced with adversity, they keep on working because they are stubborn. And so now you're understanding this property of being stubborn as something that is a good feature in life. But then there's another person and you will say that, you know, they had the wrong idea and they will not change it because they are stubborn. And now you're seeing stubbornness as something which is a feature that has a negative value in life. And interestingly, and this is true for the majority of the things, and emotions is quite similar. So a very clear example is fear. Fear usually is seen as a negative emotion, but of course, many times fear is there to save you, and we all understand this. And not only that, fear sometimes can be pleasant. And when one says this, it immediately sounds absurd, but then people do watch a lot of horror movies and they've always been a very, very popular topic in movies because people enjoy the experience of experiencing fear when they're in a situation when they understand that there's no risk. And what to me is the most interesting situation to experience fear and to understand that you can resignify or reappraise this emotion, which is the direction I'm going, is the roller coaster. So people actually do pay. They spend hours waiting in line and they pay good amounts of money just to feel fear. And the reason for that is that fear can be pleasurable. It can be an interesting emotion. It can be one that you can enjoy. So what I'm saying by this, and this is one of the most essential ideas in emotional regulation, is it's very hard, almost impossible, to turn off fear. Like if you have fear of flying or if you're going to undergo surgery like I did yesterday and you have fear for that, those things are very hard to change. For instance, one classic example, if you're going to give a talk, you know, in like a TED talk or something like that, or a concert, then people feel very intimidated and they feel fear. And one idea of the more like the first intuition on how to regulate this emotion is if this fearness is unpleasant or it prevents you to do what you would want to do or it interferes with your capacity of performing well, then the first reflex is just to turn it off. But this is almost impossible. You know, people do this by distracting, by watching movies, but it doesn't work well. It often engages in things where the solution is worse than what they're remediating and so on. But then there is a much more interesting way of working with this, which is reappraisal. And the idea is understanding that you have fear, but giving it another narrative, which is I have twinkles in my stomach and something important is happening and I'm in a roller coaster. And in the same way that you can enjoy a roller coaster because you understand in the end that nothing can go really wrong. And once you understand this, it's not that you do not have fear because your body is still telling you that something very important is happening, but you have given yourself this story in which this fear now does not become something which is painful or something which interferes, but the other way around, something which is motivating. And if you think about it, this is actually what the elite sportsmen do. So if you think, for example, like Andy Roddick or Federer or Nadal, the great tennis players, or Usain Bolt, they do their best marks in the most difficult moments. So in the final of the Olympics or in the set point or in the match point of Wimbledon, that's when they play their best point. And why do they do that? It's not because when they're playing this point, they just shut down their emotions. They feel these emotions, but these emotions, instead of stopping them or preventing them from doing what they do, empowers them. And this is reappraisal. And this is, I think, based on all this very substantial science that has shown, the most interesting tool that we have to change our emotional experience. It's not by shutting it down. It's not by trying to control what happens in our body, but just by changing the story of what we tell to ourselves.
Wow. I love that. Okay. Now, this is obviously a very fascinating topic and very important, understanding our minds, understanding why we do what we do. So where can people find out more about your work or get your new book, The Power of Words, How to Speak, Listen, and Think Better?
Yeah, well, the book should be everywhere now, I think, in the US and the UK. It's distributed by Macmillan. I had a previous book, which sold very well in the US market also and in English market, which is The Secret Life of the Mind, which has some of the questions of like what you were just mentioning. And then my work also, I have TED Talks that can be found. I think just Googling me and so on that you can find more than there should be. I'm always a bit ashamed of having so much content out there. But the books, especially The Power of Words, is a book that I'm very proud of. I think it's a honest book. From an author perspective, it's always very hard because, at least for me, you write at the same time for many different people. And I think this is part of the conflict that we also have in life. Sometimes you're thinking in your readers and you want to please them and you want to write things. You want to write a book that will do well and so you want to simplify it and so on. But to me, something which was interesting, and I think that this explains, so this book has been kind of the bestseller of the Spanish market for the last 3 years. And I think what happened with this book, and this was not meant, what I was saying in the beginning is it was a book that I wrote because I was struggling and I wanted to find a solution. One of the things, let me tell you the story of like actually the one thing that was in the very beginning of this book. I have two children. Now they are 15 and 12. But at the time when I began writing this book, they were like 8 or 6. And I love my children with all my heart. And I try as much as I can be to be a very good father. And I spend a lot of time with them. But yet, in the enormous desire that I had that nothing will happen to them, that they will be safe, that they will do well, that they will be good educated and so on, often I forgot to be just compassionate with them, just not asking them all the time to be careful and to do well and to learn and to study and to eat well and so on. And as to not make this abstract, because I think this will be something that people will recognize, and this is kind of a central story in the book. Like if someone is walking in the street and she falls, the reaction of 99.9% of the people listening to us will be that they will go there and ask, are you feeling okay? Is there something I could do for you? Like No one will shout at this person or electionate or try to tell this person that she was running very fast. The first reaction is a very good one, which is compassion. It's the understanding that a person is suffering and the thought that you have of what you may do to remediate or alleviate in this particular moment in this suffering. And this is true for a person that people don't know. But if you've seen like a child falling and their mother or father, usually what they will say is something very different, which is, I've told you 55 times not to run and to be attentive and not to look. And once again, this comes from a reflex that is healthy in a way, which is your intention that you do not want them to fall again because you are afraid that something will happen to them. But science has shown us that this is not productive because they do not learn in the moment they are suffering. And so we should be compassionate. And maybe the next day, out of the heat of the moment and in calmness, then you can have a conversation of, well, you know, in the last 10 days, you've fallen 3 times. What do you think you may be doing wrong? And something in the same sort. And not only with this happens with our children, but even worse, it happens with us. Because the person we are less compassionate with is ourselves. So if I happen to fall, then my reaction will be shame. I'll feel stupid. I will never ask myself, how am I feeling? Is there something I can do for myself? And so this to me is kind of a very dramatic paradox of human behavior, which is that from a good principle, we end up being very uncompassionate with the people we love the most. And this to me was something I just did not want to be like this. This was something I wanted to change. And when I wanted to change this, I realized it can be changed, as we were saying in the beginning, but also it's not just a matter of willingness. It's not like if you say, I want to play tennis, then you have to train and you have to understand and you have to see what is the right technique to improve your tennis. If you want to improve your habits and the habits of how you speak to the people you love and how you speak to yourself and so on, then you need to work on that and you need some training on what to do and what not to do. And so I went into science. And as it happens, there is formidable science that gives the best response for this problem. And this is what the book is about. And so the book started not as something I really meant, trying to construct a bestseller or with a very clear intention, but really with a more simpler goal of finding a solution for something I was struggling with. And as it happens, I think this is something that the majority of us struggle with. And this is why in the end, Leonard Cohen, the singer and the guitarist player, he always used to say that in stories, you never have to say general things. You have to tell your own stories because those are the ones that really look like to the stories of the other people. And I think this is a bit what happened with this book. And this was not intentional or deliberate or meant. It just happened. And this is also, I think, why I have a kind of a strong attachment to this particular book, because in a way I've exposed, I am a bit the anti-hero of the book. I'm not there having all the solutions but I'm there as the one that actually really had to go for the questions because I'm struggling with the same things that I think we most struggle with.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Okay, so we've been speaking today with Mariano Sigman. He's an internationally leading figure in cognitive neuroscience, director of the Human Brain Project, and author of the new book, The Power of Words, How to Speak, Listen, and Think Better, as well as the earlier book, The Secret Life of the Mind. And you can find him online doing TED Talks. Just Google Mariano Sigman, Mariano Sigman, Sigman. And the new book, The Power of Words, How to Speak, Listen, and Think Better, can be found at all the places where you like to buy your books, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's out there and it's available. Mariano, thank you so much for being here, sharing your work with us and some fantastic tips and thought-provoking ideas that you've raised here today. And both books have a lot of value for people who are interested in understanding the human mind, why we do what we do, and how we can change our stories, change our reality for a better future. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much.
Miles, you're late. Again.
You are not living
Where have you
to
been?
Your full potential.
No sense of responsibility.
This is Kevin Love. I've partnered with The Spider Within, a Spider-Verse story to let you know that everyone's going through something, even superheroes.
You're not reaching your full potential.
Unacceptable, Miles.
Let's take the stigma out of asking for help.
Hey, Dad, you got a minute?
Yeah, what's up, son?
I just got so much on my mind,
If you need support, visit kevinlovefund.org to learn more.
I'm Heather Vail with the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and this is your community events calendar for nonprofit initiatives and charity events around the Valley. Collaboration Center's third annual Harvesting Hope Family Fall Festival and Community Resource Fair is happening next Saturday, November 16th from 12 to 3 p.m. at Collaboration Center's campus. This free inclusive event features a sensory-rich petting zoo, extensive resource fair, and fall festival activities for those of all abilities. Get all the details at collablv.org. That's collablv.org. The Get Launched Vegas Finale Showcase by Positively Arts is taking place next Saturday, November 16th, with pre-show entertainment and cocktail hour from 1:15 to 2:15 p.m. and showtime from 2:30 to 5 p.m. at Notoriety. This transformative performance experience, inspired by American Idol, offers aspiring performers free training, mentorship, and a chance to shine on stage. Get your tickets or find out more at notorietylive.com. That's notorietylive.com. Monday's Dark with Mark Chinook is a bi-monthly musical fundraising party at The Space, with each event raising $10,000 for a specific charity in 90 minutes. Upcoming shows include Monday, November 18th at 8 p.m. benefiting the Veterans Social Club. Get tickets or find out more details at mondaysdark.com. That's mondaysdark.com. And Miracle Flights is hosting the Wine Flights Holiday Wine Walk on Saturday, November 23rd from 5 to 8 p.m. with tasting stations at the 7 Lights for Flights displays throughout downtown Summerlin. Funds raised will help Miracle Flights fulfill their mission of providing free air transportation to kids who need assistance reaching medical care. Get your tickets or find out more at miracleflights.org. That's miracleflights.org.